Good morning, everyone. Hey, you guys, you're welcome to stand if you're welcome, but there are seats here. Like, if you want to sit down, you can. And there's some in the back there as well. And so if you want to, just don't want you to have to stand through the whole thing, you know. All right. Really appreciate the worship and song this morning, and just Eric's choice of songs to kind of get us thinking about God at work. And this morning I wanted to start out by asking a question. And this question's not, I'm going to try, it's not a question I'm just asking a lot. I'm actually asking you guys, I'm asking you to answer. So you can, if you want to. So my question this morning as we start out, the title of my sermon is An Invitation to Be Part of Something Great. And I wanted to ask you guys if you could be invited to join anything of your choosing, what would it be? Okay? If you could be invited to be a part of something, like, I don't know, a team, a band, a group, a movement, is there anything that you can think of that you would love to just be invited to? Maybe you haven't thought about that question before, but think about anything that you'd be like, yes, it'd be so awesome if I was invited to this. Anyone?
NBA.
Playing the, okay. Playing in the NBA?
To meet the president.
To meet the president, okay. Yeah. That'd be interesting. Yep. Anyone else? Anyone else have ever dreamed of, like, oh, it would be so amazing to be invited into, to be a part of this movement, this thing, this team, this whatever. Anyone else? All right. There's in this past couple months, there's been some really amazing, I guess, past months, weeks, there's been some amazing things going on. Just parts of a team or group. Again, a couple of, how long ago was it that Osama went down? It was like 2 months ago, is that right? Osama bin Laden, May? Yeah. And, after he was taken down, for a little while in the media, the Navy SEALs were talked about for a little while. They were on the news, Newsweek, there was something like, the coolest guys ever, the Navy SEALs, And these guys, they have the same training or similar training or rigorous training as those who become astronauts, like, going out into space and going to do a mission someplace. They've got extreme combination of brain or psychological and also physical training. With simulated battle stress of like really heavy stress, there's a 1 week where they really go through this heavy stress. Like the people that go through it call Hell Week, where there's like just incredible, I guess, psychological stress. I've seen pictures. I didn't bring them with me, but I've seen pictures where they tie them up and then like pull them underwater. And they have to like swim out with their feet, or they're underwater for long periods. They even have a really deep diving pool that's like, maybe 20 feet deep, where they go down in there. And throughout this week, any one of the men, if they like, they're like, I just can't take it anymore. I can't survive this anymore. There's a bell that any of the Navy SEALs are trying to be a Navy SEAL can ring and say like, we're done. I'm done. I'm gonna honorably let myself go from this. Right now, there's about 2,500 SEALs in active duty around the world. Virtually all of them are, of course, secret. And the best of those Navy SEALs are invited to become part of a team called the SEALs Team 6. Team 6. And it's popularly known as Team SEAL Team 6. And that's the team that actually went in to get Osama bin Laden. And both those in the Air Force as well as Navy SEALs, the elite medics who are part of the Navy SEALs. Actually, they do. It's weird. That's like wild. They actually do drown them. They drown them as part of their training and then revive them, because what they want to simulate is just to be calm in all circumstances. You know, to have your head about you when you're being drowned at some point. And also, it said that they want Navy SEALs. One of the SEAL trainers said, "We want potential SEALs to be clear in their own minds that they prefer to be out there in the cold and pain versus the warm and comfortable." So they want these guys to be like, we want it clear in their minds that they will be out there in just pain and suffering. That's where they want to be, to serve and to be a part of this, what they're doing, their mission, as opposed to, like, you know, a really comfortable place. So it's like these guys, man, it's really an invite to be a part of this team, to be like, whoa, this is like an elite team that only a few are invited to be a part of. And I don't know, I mean, many of you out there are probably like, well, I really would never want to be invited to be part of a Navy SEAL. I don't want to be drowned, you know, I don't want to be this, you know. But it's, you know, like sacrifice. They really lay down their lives as far as, you know, wanting to be a part of this. A few weeks ago back, you remember this shot, right? You know, women's soccer team, you know, I think we were traveling, or maybe I saw it on television, just the highlights of, you know, the women beat Brazil. You know, I'm like, I said, Sarah, I missed the whole game. I'm like, I got to go on YouTube and watch this goal, you know, because it was like the 122nd minute of the game, you know, right? Abby Wamba, right? There's a crossover. You've probably seen the highlights, a crossover, and she scores, you know, and like the crowd goes wild and stuff like that. I mean, and what an amazing, I mean, they ended up losing, right, to Japan, I think, right? But what an amazing run, and to be part of something that's like, oh, how cool would it be to be a part of like some team that's like just this moving, and it's like it's doing well, it's thriving. Or for me, here's what my dream would be: to be a part of the Davis Cup, like tennis. You know, Luke's is the NBA, even though he's a short guy. But hey, there's short guys in the NBA, and also I'm short for these guys on the tennis team. But this is the Davis Cup, and for me, my specific dream, this will date me, you can see how far back this goes, is to be on the 1995 U.S. Davis Cup team. You know, you get Sampras there, you got Jim Kerr, you got Agassi before when he had hair, you know, the long hair back in the 90s, So yeah, that's like where I'd want to be a part of. And so today, I want us to talk, and again, this team, it's like being invited to it. It's being invited to it. So maybe we could all think of something. Can you think of something that you would really want to be invited to be a part of? And this stuff is, you know, even this stuff, it's really cool, but sometimes I think, to be a part of history, to be a part of a changing history. And really, what we're talking about this morning is, hey, God, in experiencing God, since we're going through this series of experiencing God, part of, like, knowing His will and experiencing Him, part of it is Him inviting us in. God invites us in to be a part of, what He's doing. We've been going through the series for, this is like the third part of our series, and we saw that God, in John 5, it talked about how God is always at work. He's always at work around us. You know, in the Bible it says there's times when there's places where He's not at work, where, for example, when Christ again goes to His hometown and like doesn't perform miracles there because people's hearts are hard, so He doesn't really work there. Or there's a place in Acts where Paul has this dream, and it actually says that the Spirit prevented Paul from going into one area and moved him to Macedonia. And so there's places that God's always at work. He's not at work everywhere, but He's always at work. Jesus said, "My Father is at work to this very day, and I too am working." Right now, you guys, right now, someplace in you, like Eric talked about the three ways that God's at work in you, some people right now, God's really moving in some of you. And if you look around, God's really moving around you in some places. And also then we talked about not only is he at work, but he pursues. Last week we talked about how God pursues a relationship with us, a love relationship with us. We looked at John 10. It said, Jesus said, "I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, I know the Father, and I lay my life down for the sheep." Right? So I talked about, hey, in him pursuing us, we also are able to recognize his voice. So last week, did you spend time? You know, we just saw up here one of the quotes that Eric put up here was Andrew Murray, some people pray, and some people pray to know God. Some people pray to know God. So last week, did you spend time? Did you like go, hey, I want to see you. I want to know you. So many times we pray. We pray for like the things that we're hoping God will do. But do we ever just pray like, I just want to know you this week? What? Tell me what's on your heart, God. Tell me what you're doing. Right? Tell me what you're doing. So this morning we're talking about God inviting us to become involved with him in his work. For us to kind of experience him lifted off of the pages of our Bible and to see him move so that we can join in him and what he's doing. So when God is working or when he's about to purpose something to happen, his main channel for him to work is through people, all right? It's through you. It's through the church, okay? When, for example, in the Bible, we've got several examples in the Bible of God purposing something, and he's like, he goes to someone and says, hey, I want you to join in what I'm doing. When God was ready to judge the world, he came to Noah. He said, Noah, I'm about to do something, and I'm inviting you to be a part of what's going to happen. When God was ready to build a nation for himself, he went to Abraham. Abraham, you know, I'm going to make your descendants as many as the stars in the sky. I'm about to work, and I want you, Abraham, to believe and trust what I'm going to do. And when God was decided to deliver the children, the people of Israel, he appeared to Moses. Moses, I'm about to do something. And so right now, God is doing things. And so right now, he may be asking you to like, hey, I want you or I want our group to join in what he's doing. If you open up your Bibles, maybe someone could... James, can you pass out... Thanks, Jason. You and Jason pass out the Bibles. If you guys could open up to Exodus... You have your own Bibles, and or if you can wait for a Bible. Exodus 3. We've been following along with Moses' story about how Moses was able to, you know, not just have either a intellectual assent to knowing God, or not how Moses had an emotional experience with God, but how Moses was able to experience and see God in his life and around him. So starting Exodus, we'll back up just a little bit. Again, we went through this, but I'll kind of share with you the story. It's Exodus chapter 2, verse 23. During that long period, the king of Egypt died. The Israelites groaned in their slavery and cried out, and their cry for help because of their slavery went up to God. God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So God looked on the Israelites, and he was concerned about them. God is already beginning to work. He's already purposing. He already has something in mind to accomplish. 3:1. Now Moses was tending his flock, the flock of Jethro, and Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames in the fire within a bush. Moses saw that the bush was on fire and did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over to this strange sight. Why the bush does not burn up? Then the Lord saw that he had gone over to look. God called to him from the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, Here I am. Do not come any closer. God said, Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. At this point, we talked about last week how God was no longer for Moses the God of the Israelites so much, or the God of my relatives of Abraham, Isaac, and Moses. This was now becoming very personal, a very close encounter with God himself. And so now it was becoming, Moses was experiencing a very personal relationship with God. And I asked you guys, hey, have you ever had that kind of moment where you're like, hey, this is, I'm experiencing God for the first time in some way, very, very deep way, where it's like, this is God, I see him, I experience him, I'm knowing him now. Or at least this introduction of God to Moses. Then the Lord said, verse 7, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them cry out because of their slave drivers. I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and bring them out of that land into the good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way of the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you've brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. All right? So God goes to Moses, and he says, Look, I see what's happening. It is not for our lives as we look around that God is unaware of what's going on around us. We may feel like that sometimes. We may feel like, hey, God obviously does not see what's happening. But God is completely aware of what's happening in your life, in the lives around you. It's never like he's surprised. God is never like, whoa, the wool was pulled over my eyes for a little while and I couldn't see what was going on. He always sees what's going on. Remember, Hebrews, the Israelites were there for 400 years, right? And so sometimes we think God is not working. God does not see what's happening. But God always sees what's happening. And he goes to Moses and says, Moses, it comes out, the invitation comes as a command. Moses, I want you to go to the Pharaoh, because I'm about to do something. And I'm inviting you to be a part of what I'm doing. Moses is like, whoa, this is a little bit scary. It's a little bit crazy for me. But God says to him, I will be with you. I'll be with you. So the cool thing is when God invites us, he's not like, here you go, I'm giving this to you, get out there and go. Let me know what happens when you come back. He's not like that. He's like, Moses, get out there and talk to the Pharaoh, and I will be with you. I am going with you. When I ask you to do something, when I'm inviting, when I want you to experience me, I'm going to walk with you. I'm going to guide your hands. I'm going to give you the words to say. I'm going to move your feet. Right? I will enable you. I will be with you to do this. And so for us, I think that God is at work, and God is inviting us to do something. Right now in the church, we're beginning to move in a direction of, well, at least at least for this fall. Pastor Tsui came to me earlier, a few months ago, and said, look, Brady, you know how we always get our seven churches in the Michigan area together? You know, and I know in the past, like, we've had seven churches, and the youth groups have gotten together, but then, like, kind of like on Saturday, it's usually a Friday and a Saturday, and usually, like, Saturday, like, you know, you guys are off doing, you know, sports and stuff like that. So I'm like, well, I think that maybe the youth groups will get together at some other point and have some other time together. But he said, Brady, we're inviting this guy. God brought this guy to my mind, and I've invited him to come to this area. His name is Chris Yuan, and he's a professor at Moody, and his story is pretty interesting. He grew up in a typical Chinese family. He got good grades. He played piano. He, you know, did everything like in a Chinese fashion. He went off to college. He went into the military. And he said during that whole time, he said he was hiding something. He said, after I got out of the military, I came out as a homosexual man. And he lived the gay lifestyle. And he also, at the same time, got into drugs and began to deal drugs. And he said, one day he was expecting a shipment into his house. He's like, I wasn't a small-time dealer. I was dealing with the whole southeast of the United States. And he said, one day I was expecting a shipment, and I got a knock on my door. And I opened the door. About 8 FBI agents and 2 German shepherds came into my apartment and busted me, right? Meanwhile, his mom and dad had become Christians. They had gone to his house, his dad gave him his old Bible. And he was like, thanks, Dad. As soon as his parents left, he threw the Bible into the garbage. And again, he hadn't talked with his parents for 2 years. On the day he was busted, he called his mom. He said, Mom, I'm done. You know, I'm going to prison. It was there at prison that he met God. He said, I was walking around the prison yard and trying to stay away from the criminals, because I am not a criminal, right? And he said, on top of one of the garbage heaps was a small Gideon's Bible, New Testament. So he began to read through that, and he took that and began to read it, and he was laying on a bunk, and he looked up on the top of a bunk, and it was Jeremiah 29:11, talking about God's purpose for our lives, that he's got purpose for us. And he said, if you're bored, read 29:11, Jeremiah 29:11. So he looked at that and began to read, and he became a believer. He became a believer in prison, and he just caught on fire, and he said, like, God, I want to serve my life. I want to give my life to you. So he felt called to go he called his parents and said, Mom, Dad, I was wondering if you could get me an application for Moody Bible Institute. It's the only seminary that I know of, so could you get me one of those? And so he filled it out, and he came to the point where it said, you need 3 references. And so he's like, okay, I've got a prison chaplain, a prison guard, and a fellow inmate. And they wrote for him a reference, and he was accepted. And he said, like, so I got out of prison, I went off to Moody, said, and you know, my roommate would be like, hey, nice to meet you. How was your summer? Like, what was your summer like? He's like, man, I was in prison. You know, I was in prison. We're actually inviting him to come. All 7 churches are right now. There's 5 churches that are committed, September 29th and September 30th, to have him come in. And we're going to have an outreach. We're going to have an outreach where we invite parts that go out. We're going to promote it in different parts of the different colleges, as well as the area surrounding Northville, which is where we're going to have it. And so I'm like, hey, God, are you moving in Northville? Are you moving so that the gospel could go out? All right? Because God is always moving, and I'm always wondering, like, hey, God, where are you moving? Where are you moving? But I think it's possible for us to not know, to not see where God's working. This is the last verse. I'm gonna invite Luke and Nita to come up in a couple minutes. But if you guys would flip from Exodus and move forward to 2 Kings. So just flip over several books over. 2 Kings chapter 6. Verse 17. What's happening here is Elijah and his servant were in the city called Dothan, and they were surrounded by an army, and his servant is terrified. All right, and so this is chapter 6, verse 17. Elijah prays this. He says, "And Elijah prayed, O Lord, open his eyes so that he may see. Then the Lord opened the servant's eyes. He looked around and saw hills full of horses and chariots of fire around Elisha." So it's like Elijah could see. He had spiritual eyes to see. Look, we're surrounded by this army, but don't worry. I am able to see what God's doing. I am able to see what's happening. And so he said, I'm going to pray the Lord to open up my servant's eyes so that he can also see. And he prayed, and his servant's eyes were open so he could also see what was happening around him. And that's how it is for us. What we need sometimes is just to have spiritual eyes. So I'm praying, like, as we get to know him, what we've been seeing about, as we get to know him, that we would have spiritual eyes to be able to see what God is doing in us, around us, and through us. Okay? Before Luke and Anita left, I remember Anita saying at one point, she said, we want to go to China to see what God is doing there, to see what God is doing. And when we think about the three ways that God has, that Eric highlighted, like, hey, God working around us, God working through us, and God working in us, I imagine heard with Luke and Anita that probably witnessed all three of those things, you know, all three of those things. So Luke and Anita are just going to share what God's doing. So why don't you guys come up? If we can encourage them, just encourage them to come back.
We didn't really know how self-dependent we are until God started putting us under these pressure. Maybe a little bit like Brady was sharing about the seals, putting under a lot of pressure. But God knows what's best for us. We also learned that we're just so different. even though on the outside we look like the rest of Chinese people, I suppose, the locals. But I think our parents were right. We're much more American than we think. But we're definitely humble and forced to depend on God. And we realize again that our faith is just